Hey everyone, welcome back to Scouted Weekly. I know it's been a little while, but we are back with a vengeance. On today's show, Joe and Stephen join me to talk about taking your shirt off, running into the crowd, kicking ball boys, and maybe the funniest free kick we've ever seen in our lives. If that sounds good to you, stay tuned, and also hear one of the most chaotic handbook history rounds to date, which is saying a lot. All right, on with the show. Good morning, everyone. It's Tuesday, the 19th of March, and in front of me, I have an introduction that I wrote predicated on the knowledge that Phil Costa was going to be here. Sadly, he is not here, and so it's going to be slightly less impactful, but I'm going to do it anyway because I put the effort in. Okay, but here we go. So, some bad news to start, I'm afraid. Since we last spoke, something truly awful occurred in the parish of Scouted. Some may have put this out of their memory already, but I need to bring it up because it's important. So, on Saturday, the 24th of February, Newcastle United came all the way down to North London. And, well, since he put the ball into the net with his kneecaps, Sven Botman has not been seen since. With me today to pay his respects is a man I, for one, cannot put into words. It's Joe Donoghue.
Cut. Cut intro.
Do you not like that one?
I didn't quite like that one, especially because I had put that to the back of my mind, because there have been countless incidents since, which have just been just as bad. But yeah, thanks for the introduction. Looking forward to a bit of handbook history later on in the pod, and yeah, just retaining my title basically.
Ooh, setting your stakes early. Yeah, obviously, wish Phil was here so that he could join me in bullying you, but he isn't. Instead, I have the only man more available for comment than Jason Tindall. It's Stephen Gonardis.
Jeez, what an intro. Yes.
I hope you appreciate it.
Here to save the day. Here to save the day once again with my presence.
Yes, save us from the absolute nonsense. All right, boys, let's just get straight into talking about football before I piss off the entirety of Newcastle. Joe, you and I watched the FA Cup this weekend. It was a great time for to not have any stakes, because Liverpool and Manchester United did a ding-dong. They went back and forth at it. It was a banger game. I just want to talk about general thoughts, takeaways, because it was a lot of fun.
Yeah, I'm glad that Scott McTominay is just getting warmed up for June, because the Germans aren't going to know what's hit them in that Euro 2024 opener. Yeah, I mean, hugely entertaining game. A lot of people talk about, magic of the cup and all this, and has it lost its sparkle and all these sorts of things. A Man United Liverpool 4-3 game at Old Trafford, which is decided by a 121st minute winner, where the player gets carried away, takes his shirt off, and then is sent off for a second bookable offence. What's not to like about that? Unless you're a Liverpool fan, of course. Yeah, I mean, it was just fantastic to watch. And that is even without getting into the fact that, you had Coventry going through to the semi-final, Championship Club, Mark Robbins celebrating in the face of a ball boy, and then having to apologise afterwards. That is... yeah, that is literally the definition of magic of the cup. You don't get that. You don't get that in the DFB Pokal or, the Coupe de France, do you?
I don't know how they treat ball boys over in France, but I imagine it's probably better than here, considering we have every few years a story pops up about ball boy getting beaten up or whatever. Although the guy who got kicked by Eden Hazard seems to be doing all right for himself.
Also, disrespect to Saarbrücken in Germany, who've knocked out three Bundesliga teams to reach the semi-finals of the Pokal.
True.
You want to talk about that?
You know, that's competitive. That's competitive football, not competitive shaking your fist in a child's face, which Mark Robbins was very successful at.
I don't even know how to bridge that to any other discussion. In fact, I do actually, because I had a point here. You brought it up just a minute ago about Ahmad getting sent off for celebrating. And it got me thinking because I think if you score in the final seconds of a game against your huge rival, you're already on a yellow card. This is kind of your announcement to Old Trafford, right? It's a huge moment in your career. And you know, you've steeled yourself. You're just going to get sent off, whatever you do, because the shirt's coming off. Something's going to happen. I was a bit disappointed that what he settled on doing was just taking his shirt off. And it, the nips weren't even free. You know, he had a shirt on underneath. So what I want to know is, boys, if this happened to you and you could do anything because you've already resigned to getting sent off, how would you celebrate? Lead up to this question, so off the dome.
I'm going to let Steve say this one first because I think he's geared.
I'm going straight into the crowd. Just doesn't matter. No matter what happens, no matter what the consequences are, I'm going straight in. I'm surfing.
I want to see someone get right up to the back of the crowd, like Rosie. Like just keep going.
Was that like Eric? Was it Eric Dyer that jumped into to punch on with the fans? Was it in the Netherlands against someone?
Yeah, that was slightly. That wasn't so much.
Oh, I know it wasn't a goal celebration, but that similar style, just jumping up the stairs, like climbing them one by one.
That was
up the seats, rather. Sorry,
yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was. It was a couple of years ago now.
Yeah, yeah, I remember the incident. Yeah,
Mourinho era.
I feel like something had happened. Like his brother was in the stand.
Yeah,
and there was a little bit of trouble, so he waded in.
Yeah. I'd be jumping up the chairs one row by one row, just getting to the top and just maybe flex up the top of the chairs.
Not punch anyone.
Nah.
I don't think that would be appropriate.
You don't want to get an extended ban, Joey Barton style.
Yeah. What I'd do is I'd do Tamiri Ketsbaya style. So I would remove my shirt angrily. I'd palm off all of my teammates trying to congratulate me for a last minute winner. And I'd kick the absolute piss out of the advertising hoardings.
I thought you were going to go with a ball boy then.
It would have been in keeping, wouldn't it? No, that's maybe a bridge too far. I think the Ketsbaya has to be.
Oh, the Adebayor is also a classic to go back
no,
to.
No, it isn't.
Yes, it's not for you, but for everyone else it is.
I'm in charge of this podcast and we only do Arsenal punching down, okay? We don't do any nasty stories about Adebayor. I think I'd go home.
Just run out of the
stadium.
I think
they'd just run out of the stadium.
you just do the Xabi Alonso picture in sort of sepia tone where he's got his boots in one hand and just turns.
Yeah, just blow a kiss. Or maybe get a kebab on the way out or something.
Luke Littler style.
Yeah. All right, that was a stupid question. Serious question. Amad, are we saying Diallo anymore or have we just cut that? Amad, Diallo, just Amad. This is a bit of an odd one because I think when he came back from loan from Sunderland over the summer, people were quite excited about him. Obviously, he had his moment in the playoff semi-final last year, I think. And he has been not the youth star that everyone's talking about at Manchester United. That's very much gone to Colby Mainoo and, you know, big money, Rasmus Højlund. So he's had to wait for quite a while. Joe, I imagine you watched him quite a bit in the championship last year. What were you thinking last summer about, like, you know, were you expecting him to get more of a shot at United or is this kind of like what you expected?
Well, I mean, it's a big step up from Sunderland to Man United, a chasm, some would say. But I mean, I did think there could have potentially been a bridging loan. You know, to say that he could play Premier League football regularly because he was one of the best players in the Championship. But was he ready to play regularly for Man United? I mean, looking at Antony's form, then yeah, maybe he was. But I don't know. I think, especially for the price tag that he arrived for, he basically had to hit the ground running he has to hit the ground running whenever he does get a chance in that team. I mean, he's definitely written himself into Man United folklore with that goal and obviously what ensued afterwards. But I don't know. I still don't really see whether his future is actually at Old Trafford, because I don't know. It just doesn't seem as though Eric Ten Hag's too hot on him.
Steve, any thoughts on the year it's taken Ahmad to break in? And is this, I guess, a break in now?
Do you think? No. Okay. He won't last at United. It's just a reality of the situation. He hasn't quite developed the way that they would have hoped, and maybe he's just straight up just not cut out to play at this level. He's still really, really small. And I think in the kind of winger that Ten Hag seems to favour, he's really looking for a more athletic, wide forward type than he is kind of the smaller, dribblier type. And if they are that type, like Garnacho, they have to be really, really good. And Ahmad is nowhere near as good as Garnacho. So I think he'll be probably, I don't know how long he's got left in his contract, but either loaned or sold at the end of the year, because, yeah, it seems if he hasn't really got a look in this year, then there's probably not a huge chance that he's going to get one in the future. United will probably sign a winger or two in the summer, and there's going to be even more plays in front of him in the pecking order. So probably a nice moment to really remember his tenure at United by, but I will be surprised if he makes a career there, although it can always be proven wrong if he gets on a little run, but yeah, I just can't see it.
It's basically a Federico Makeda moment for him, isn't it?
And you'll have it forever, which, as we said before, I wouldn't be complaining about a last-minute FA Cup quarterfinal goal against Liverpool if you're a United player, even if it's the absolute pinnacle of what you ever achieve as a United player.
Yeah, say what you want about Makeda, but we do still talk about him. No idea where he is now. He's probably 35, knowing how long we've been doing this. I thought, I can't move on without just saying, in that counter-attack at the end, they're 2-on-1. I think it's Conor Bradley that's back for Liverpool, right? Garnacho, that is not a good pass, bro. Like, Ahmad has so much more to do than he should have had to do. So I just wanted to get that knife in there. Sort yourself out, Garnacho. All right, we'll move on to someone else who needs to sort himself out. The subheading of this topic I've put, Raheem knocks out a satellite. I guess we could have more of a serious conversation about this game, but I did think it was a game full of extremely funny moments, if you're a neutral. Not so much for... Well, I guess in the end for Chelsea fans, they're fine. But I said there's two conversations. One, Raheem kind of... So he had a bit of a stinker, if you take all of the funny mess-ups he did out in isolation, which I've seen a ton of fail comps on Twitter. He also got a really good assist for Cole Palmer's goal midway between doing all of his hilarious misses. And he was treated very poorly by Chelsea fans on the day. He's been a bit of a lightning rod, I think, throughout his career for criticism and stuff. What's my point here? What's my question? I guess, which of the funny moments was the funniest, Joe Donoghue?
Oh, come on. It's got to be the free kick. It's the build-up. Yeah. It's the build-up to it as well. It's the proximity to goal. It's just how far, wide, and high it goes. Like, it's unbelievable. I genuinely think that could be... You know, you see it all the time. Like, someone will go, oh, that's the best or that's the worst of something ever. I think that could be the worst free kick ever.
I've seen a Robert Huth one going around, which was also incredible. But Robert Huth has a defense of being Robert Huth.
Yeah.
You know, where Raheem Sterling is Raheem Sterling.
There's also a chance
that- also. Yeah, Robert Huth's style was literally just trying to kick the ball as hard as he could every time, if I remember correctly. So,
yes,
inevitably one is just going to go into orbit. Whereas I never envisioned Raheem Sterling as the like power free kick taker that would send one that far.
I think the funniest thing about it for me was the way he's so clearly, he's trying to do the knuckleball, right? He's trying to do the Ronaldo thing, the way he strikes it, the way he shapes. He's trying to do like the most cultured thing possible. And instead he's hit poor Timmy and Roey at the back of Stamford Bridge.
God, come on. Sure, it's Tarquin, not Timmy.
Tarquin. All right, we'll go with Tarquin then.
Well, it tells you how good the players that have mastered that technique are, that are able to do it consistently and accurately. Because as it shows, it's not an easy skill, and when you get it wrong, it can look ridiculous.
Big up Lewis Dunk. That's what I'm saying. Should be in the England squad, smashing them in.
Big up Alex. On the left remember, wing. The old Chelsea defender.
I do, yeah. Bring him back for Chelsea. Put him on left wing. My choice for funniest moment was Axel Bizzarzi's own goal, actually. It didn't have anything to do with Raheem Sterling at all. Robert Sanchez gave him a little kiss afterwards, which I thought was
it
nice.
It just so happened to be against Sunderland.
Always a great time when
it was
you just hoof it into your own net from miles away. A little bit more exciting than the actual
technique on it as well. I don't know why he tried to clear the ball.
Yeah, we don't need to bring that up again. And if you know, again, we're talking about
Federico Makeda and all that sort of thing about having their own moment.
Southampton.
Imagine if that is the only reason you are remembered as a professional footballer is for an absolutely stonking own goal. I'm going to send it right now.
Please do,
and you can have a look at it because it is absolute. I mean, the technique is incredible. He cuts across it. It's just, it's horrendous.
All right, let's have a look. Let's have a look. The live reaction.
That's an absolute banger. He just thwacks it.
How good is that? Finished.
That is a beautiful half volley.
What is he doing?
Goalkeeper's just standing there like going, what's going on here?
Bro, what is he trying to do?
The goalkeeper crouching down is just the best aspect of it. He's just shocked.
I don't think we were able to do it justice with words. So if anyone's listening, please go and just Google Santiago Virgini own goal. You will find it.
Spell that right or you'll be in trouble.
You will not be prepared for what you're about to see.
Oh dear! This is what happens when we start the podcast.
And you search him on YouTube, and it's literally a wall of Virgini scores great own goal, Virgini own goal, Virgini superb own goal. One of the best own goals ever. So yeah, he definitely made a name for himself.
Oh, poor guy, poor guy. Joe, that's a serious question. Okay, ready, prepared. Championship, that's a thing.
Yeah.
And in it are a team called Leicester City, who were the recipients of Axel Disasi's amazing own goal. So my question is, considering they can't beat a team that's been, you know, in the bottom half of the Premier League table, flirting with relegation, let's be honest. They ship four goals to this team. A team who, as we mentioned, did a lot of funny stuff. So they're running away with the championship, or they were, I guess. Leeds have hunted them down slightly. What's the gap now?
Oh, no gap. Leeds are top.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Leeds are top now.
Shows how much research you do, Thomas.
He's now going to check the table.
I'm Googling the table.
Yeah, Leeds are top on goal difference.
When did that happen?
Well, 12
wins. Ipswich are right there
games.
As well now. All right, well, I guess that strengthens my argument, which I've done this on purpose. Are they any good?
What, Leicester?
Because I've thought they were nailed on to come back up.
Yeah, they're one of
talk about them.
I mean, they're one of the best
terms
the better
of
teams.
Like, oh, they're going to be here, but
one of the better teams in Championship history. Yeah, they've been relentless this season. They've kind of hit a bit of a rough patch, but I think that the general consensus is they're still going to probably go up. If they don't, that's when they're in real bother, because of the whole FFP thing and the potential that they would start next season with a points deduction. I mean, they've got an incredibly stacked squad. You know, you've heard it said multiple times, the three teams that came down last season, Leicester, Leeds and Southampton, they all have Premier League squads. And they do. You know, the talent is incredible. And then you also look at the wage bills and the comparison of like commercial revenue. And then on top, you've got the parachute payments as well that the Premier League teams coming down get. But yeah, they are very good. But
the team of the moment in the championship is Leeds. And then you can't write off Ipswich either. I think it's absolutely incredible that you've got three teams after 38 games, more or less, on 82, 82, 81 points. Like, imagine if that was the Premier League, you know, after 38 matches. That would be the greatest title race in history.
Well, we're getting close, mate.
Well, exactly.
So the independent research that I conducted days before this podcast recording shows me that Leicester lost three in a row.
They did.
At one point. Oh, yeah. Dear, that's not good.
Everything coincides with Cassidy having his loan ended and going back to Chelsea. That's when he can pinpoint the downfall starting.
Interesting. Doesn't seem to have helped Chelsea that much. Stephen, just a quick word on something struck me from this game, in that who it was that pulled Chelsea out of this hole. So an Englishman got them in it by, we have to mention it again, literally kicking a ball out of the stadium. But it was three Englishmen that won the game for them, three young Englishmen. Carney Chukwuemeka is back. I don't know when he came back, actually, but this is the first time I've noticed him. Cole Palmer, obviously, and Noni Madueke scored a screamer. So there's a little bit of an English core building at Chelsea, I think, a core that they spent a ton of money to put together. Any thoughts on, like, just what that means generally, that they have a bunch of young English players pulling them forward? I guess there's question marks around a couple of them, that whether they're actually going to be that important moving forward. Any thoughts?
I can't really say anything specific on the game because I was busy watching Allegri's Juventus stink up the joint. But, clearly the signing of Cole Palmer has basically, I wouldn't say saved their season, but has put them in a position to be doing anything at all this season. It's quite amazing how he's come in and kind of been able to put the team on his back creatively, scoring a decent number of goals, even if you can throw a few penalties in there to top up the numbers. But so starting with him, that's been a big tick. Madueke, I'm still not sure on. I think he's the kind of player that can go hot or cold. His injury record, obviously, as we know, is pretty poor. He's the kind of guy that you feel like if you can get a good run of games going, he could just start to explode. But, you know, at a level like the Premier League, playing in a team that's struggling for wins and needs to put on the board and might not have the patience to give him a solid run at 90 minutes. And we're seeing the same thing with Mudryk at the moment as well. That it just might be difficult for him to really start to get that rhythm going. And I think his game really depends on that. He's, you know, such a skillful player. You know, when he's at his full flow, when he gets out in transition and he's carrying the ball, he can do anything. Cutting onto his left foot is absolute dynamite. So I still have some reservations, but obviously it's a good step forward. And then Chukwuemeka, kind of when he's been fit, he's always been pretty good. He had that big stint out with the ankle, I believe. But, you know, again, he's probably just one now that they're going to see how many minutes they can get into him before the end of the season and see what level he can get himself back up to. But I think he might be one, especially if there's potential for them to sell Conor Gallagher in the summer. I think that could be a player that they're looking towards as a really important player for next season, to play a bunch of minutes in Gallagher's absence.
Excellent. All right, we'll move on to talk about the big draws that happened last week. And that is obviously the continental competitions. Start with the Europa League quarterfinal draws. Joe Donoghue, what is your standout tie / general reactions to the Europa League quarterfinal draw?
The big one is the pathway that could potentially set up Liverpool versus Leverkusen in the final. That would be quite most interesting, to say the least, considering the discourse surrounding Xabi Alonso's future. But I mean, if we're talking about like European football heritage, Benfica versus Marseille, that's an absolutely whopping tie. Milan Roma, again, pretty big considering what's at stake.
I genuinely think that the Leverkusen draw is probably the least appealing.
I disagree. It's Moyes' ball against Xavi Alonso. Like, it's the most like differing stylistic mishmash. It could be. I agree. It could be really, really boring, or it could be absolutely sensational in the most fantastic way.
But that's how Moyes is going to set. Moyes is going to go there and set up to basically just nullify. It's not going to be a free flowing attacking game.
Yeah, but
game.
Like that goal goes in, that first early goal, and then everything opens up, and then it just goes crazy. I think it could be interesting. A really good test for Leverkusen as well, because West Ham is not really a team that you see a lot of in the Bundesliga, like that style. So I think, you know, most Bundesliga mid-table or, you know, lower teams concede like 4 or 5 goals a game whenever they come up against Bayern or Leverkusen. So this would be a really interesting test stylistically for how Alonso's team holds up against a team that sets up very, very differently to what they're used to facing.
Stephen, there's 3 Serie A teams in from the 8 left in the competition. Liverpool versus Atlanta. how's that one going to go?
Liverpool will win. Atalanta kind of having like a middling season. They have some good days, some bad days. They've still got a pretty good squad, but you know, Liverpool, if they're going to be gunning for this, they want to send Klopp off on a high, and I think it's going to be difficult to compete with the level of firepower. But yeah, that one has potential to be a really fun one, because Atalanta is still going to play the way that they want to play, moving the ball quick. But we'll see. Unless Scamacca goes on a rampage against Van Dijk and Konate, which as much as I love him, can't see happening, then I think Liverpool will be a little bit too strong.
Hopefully they can work out a last-minute loan deal for Ahmad Diallo. And the other Serie A tie, the all-Italian tie, is Milan versus Roma.
This one is Roma, really,
ours, because that's how you say it.
This one's really interesting because Roma were terrible when Mourinho was there, but De Rossi has come in and they have been dominating lately, scoring a bunch of goals. Lukaku, Dybala, Pellegrini's come back into really, really good form as well. So that's a trickier one than it may otherwise have been. They kind of stumbled through the round of 16 game against Feyenoord, but you know, two teams that are familiar with each other, and I think it'll be
absolutely hammered Brighton.
It was the round of 32 they played against Feyenoord. That feels like it was last week. But Milan as well. That left side is no joke with Teo Hernandez and Rafael Leao. And it's probably the big trump card, because those two guys can just explode at any minute and do just about anything and tear open a game by themselves as a duo. So, I like the tie a lot more than I would have like 3 months ago when Mourinho was there. So I think, that one's shaping up nicely. And I quite like the big domestic Champions League two-leggers as well. I don't know how you guys feel, but I'm always partial to one.
I don't like it when it's English teams.
Yeah, I'm not a huge fan.
It's boring. Yeah, I think the one team I wanted Arsenal to miss was Manchester City. Otherwise, I was happy with whoever we got. Let's talk about the big guns then, the Champions League, the real competition. We don't do any of that Thursday night rubbish anymore. So let's start with Newcastle United beat Paris Saint-Germain to go out. Yeah, that didn't count for anything in the end.
Yeah, sorry, still the most memorable game of this year's Champions League. That's all I'm going to say.
In fact, Paris is still here. That's interesting. Joe, you can have the next word now, because that was mean.
Didn't want to go.
How do you feel about these? That would have been probably more interesting than our failed trip to Paris, but we won't go into that.
We'll not discuss the failed trip to Paris.
No. Did you get a refund for that, by the way?
Didn't. I think the Champions League draw is, I saw a lot of people discussing it as, oh, this is like a FIFA 16 demo with the teams that have been selected. it is fantastic. Just the spread, you know, it's not...
I think it would have tainted the draw if there was an Arsenal Man City tie or Real Madrid Barcelona, or you know, Real Madrid Atletico. I quite like that there are teams from different countries facing each other. I also love that Arsenal have the opportunity to play against Bayern and get some revenge for all of the heavy pump-ins that they've had over the past 10, 15 years. I also love that, obviously, it was going to happen. Whoever Harry Kane went to, he was going to draw Arsenal at some point in the Champions League. I think it also reflects well on Newcastle, I believe, that Dortmund and PSG being the two teams that qualified from the group of death, that they've made it to the quarterfinals. And as well, Milan were in that group and, you know, they've made it to the quarters of the Europa League as well. So, look, it was always going to be a tough task. But I'm just glad that everyone's happy with the draw.
Yeah, so if you do some just basic football maths, Newcastle beat Paris Saint-Germain, Dortmund beat Newcastle, and Arsenal beat Newcastle 4-1. So I think if you add that up, that means Arsenal can beat Paris Saint-Germain and Dortmund 7-0. I think that's how that works. Stephen, I'll let you talk about Arsenal, I guess. What do you think our hopes of going through this tie are?
Not bad, but I will say that Tommy Tactics' Bayern Munich have been on a little bit of a tear lately.
Been cooking.
They have scored 16 goals in their last three games. They overcame that big deficit against Lazio. They were down 1-0 against Darmstadt on the weekend and put five past them and ended up winning that one 5-2. But, you know, Harry Kane's in the game. They're going to be dangerous. I think he picked up a little knock maybe, but I think he should be fit and firing by the time that tie comes around. But you look at all of these games and you go, how do you call that one? I would probably say Arsenal a favorite just for the, over the course of the whole season, who's been the better team? I'd say Arsenal have been a better team than Bayern Munich have, but bit of Champions League knockout pedigree might give Bayern a little edge here. But I think Arsenal's players are going to be so up for this match. So I'd probably put my money on Arsenal. But again, like all these ties, who knows?
Can Real Madrid knock out Man City?
Yes,
they can. That is how that's actually how football works. Is if they win over two legs, then they go through.
You are the least
such a pedant.
Ever.
Sorry,
I think that is that's the glamour tie for me. Is Real Madrid Man City, because it is it's a potential final, but in the quarters, realistically, you're probably not expecting Dortmund to get to the final. You're probably not expecting, you know, maybe not PSG, maybe not Arsenal to get to the final either. But Real Madrid City, that's a huge one, and I do think that is one where I can see it being a sort of a ding dong battle, particularly in the second leg.
Bellingham and Vinny running at the Man City defense, putting them under pressure like not many other players do. That's what I'm waiting to see. I think Bellingham's like the big trump card, just powering through the midfield. And I don't know if anyone can. That's the Rodri effect, I guess. We'll see how he deals with it and how City centre backs deal with it. But I think Bellingham is the big trump card.
A few words on Atleti Dortmund, which is, I guess, the weakest tie, I guess you'd say. Both teams kind of, Dortmund could have gone out to PSV, honestly. They weren't great in that return home leg. And Atleti squeezed past Inter, which was...
That was a great tie. That was awesome.
It was a kind of a classic tight Champions League tie. So any thoughts on how this one's going to go, Steve?
I think this is probably the easiest of the four to pick. I would say Atletico would be too strong. That game, that tie against Inter, was vintage Champions League. They stand up defensively and they do have weapons, off the bench as well. Guys coming on. I don't know. It was just exciting. It was a great tie. I don't watch them enough to really have a strong opinion, but I did see they lost 3-0 to Barca on the weekend, which is probably not the greatest vote of confidence. But again, this team knows how to win and grind out Champions League final two-legged fixtures. So I think that they'll have too much.
And Joseph, PSG, Barcelona is the last tie.
Yeah. I really wasn't that impressed by PSG every time I've seen them this season. I think they were very ordinary for the resources that they have. Obviously, you know, they're what, 12 points clear at the top of Liga. You know, you've still got trump card Kylian Mbappe. I don't know. I just feel like with Barcelona, they actually are playing quite like, they just, well, how many are they unbeaten in? It's like 10 or 12 across all comps. They really, I mean, did a number on Napoli in that second leg. And they've just not been conceding goals in La Liga, which again, I think if I'm looking at PSG,
The Pau Cubarsí effect.
Well, the Pau Cubarsí effect, yeah. And also I'm saying that as I look at the Barcelona have not been conceding, they literally did lose 5-3 to Villarreal in January. But, you know, lately anyway, they've shored up defensively. I don't know. It's a hard, tough one to call, but I think I'm probably going to say Barcelona edged that again on the grounds of maybe having that Champions League pedigree. And just PSG just do seem to not have the required mettle to get through in these really difficult games. You know, if they'd been drawn against an objectively weaker opponent, I'd say PSG would have a much better chance. But I can't really see past this Barcelona team. Just keeping them out and then, you know, getting a 1-0 or a 2-0 at Camp Nou.
I just cannot wait to see Mbappe at one end, Yamal at the other end, both just playing hero ball and just like maxing out 100%. Yeah, Yamal was super in that second leg, but didn't quite put on the scoreboard. But him and Cubarsí have just had such a major impact on this team. It's at 17 years of age. It's hard to understate. Cubarsí had Osimhen in a box in that second leg, just completely dominated him. And we're talking about one of the best strikers on the planet that everyone's going to be looking to spend nine figures on when the summer comes around. And he was beating him to every ball. He was beating him in the air and then coming out of defense, just picking out pass after pass after pass. And they were kind of undermanned in that second leg. I think in midfield, they were a bit light. They were playing Andreas Christensen as a defensive midfielder. So hopefully for them, have some numbers back, have De Jong back. And yeah, I'd probably favour them in this tie as well.
Yeah, a lot of Cubarsí's passes were going pretty viral. I think the Champions League themselves put a little comp together, just dropping passes into the centre of midfield like on a dime.
But he's also got that one that goes from where he is at left centre back and he fans it out to the right and he just hits it every single time. And you can just see that combination between him at centre back and then Yamal making these massive breakout runs down the right being an absolutely lethal combination for the next 15 years or so for Barca.
Crazy that we're talking about 17-year-olds.
And he just got called into the Spain squad as well for the upcoming game. So maybe a cheeky Euro 2024 smoky as well.
All right. My next question on the list, boys, is kind of defunct, but it's a question for Phil. It says, Phil, of the four goals Arsenal put past Newcastle United, I don't think we need to do that.
No, we don't.
And then the one after that says, Joe, would you say Newcastle United season is a 4-1 conclusion? I don't know who wrote this. It wasn't me. All right, boys, we're at the 40-minute mark, so we need to speed up. Let's very quickly blast through some watch list picks. So this is part of the show where the boys introduce or give a lowdown on some of the players they've been watching recently that they think you should take notice of. So, Joe, you wanted to talk a little bit about Jorginho Ruta, who is obviously on top of the championship right now with Leeds United.
He is, yeah. You're so on the
board. They're actually leading. They are, I don't know if you heard, they're leading on goal difference. And how has our boy Jorginho been contributing to that?
Well, he's been contributing by topping the not only the team table, but the assists table as well. He's got 16 championship assists this season. And I think he's directly contributed to 25 goals across all competitions this season. And he's just an absolute joy to watch. You know, still only 21, has obviously dropped into the championship with Leeds, having, you know, been their club record signing last January. But the way that he's sort of connected with the fan base, you know, the way that he's really taken to life at Elland Road has been something which I don't think many people would have expected from a young lad who had a really difficult first 6 months in England. He's just got this unbelievable ability, certainly at championship level, just to protect the ball. You know, he'll drop deep from his starting number 10 position, he'll drop deep into midfield, pick up possession. And he just always seems to come up with really creative passes, really good use of his body. And there was an instance for Leeds' second goal at the weekend where he receives the ball from a throw-in and basically just shields Japhet Tanganga out of the way and opens up a route straight to the byline, gets there and slaps a pass across and finds the feet of Dan James, who then scores. The only thing that is really holding him back from being sort of championship player of the season is his finishing, which, considering he was sort of signed as a striker, is, you know, the one thing that you'd hope he was actually decent at. He doesn't always seem to make the best finishing decisions, but he more than makes up for it in terms of his creative output, his availability. You know, he's pretty much always available. And he's just an absolute joy to speak to interview. You know, he basically goes around like every day is his birthday. He's just so, you know, cheery. And he bought a racehorse because he was like, yeah, you know, I fancied doing it. In his spare time, he's sort of making music with a local producer in Leeds. And he's definitely what you'd describe as a fan favorite this season. And it's not just because of his antics. It's because the buy-in is there, and it seems genuine as well, which I think is becoming less and less in football. But when things are going well, you want players to really demonstrate that. And I suppose you'll know that from the Arsenal players this season, Tom. You know, when you see that on the pitch, it is just, I don't know, it warms your heart, doesn't it?
I think you forget how it's meant to feel when you don't have it. And then when it does, it just, everything feels right. Thank you for asking me an Arsenal-related question.
I know how they make you feel. So I just, you know.
Thanks, mate. I just wanted to ask you briefly. Leeds are obviously a young team full of very exciting players like Ritter. Is there any concern that if they do go up, they could get picked apart before they're given a chance to play together in the Premier League? Or is the expectation that they can keep the core together at least?
I think the expectation is they can keep the core. I think they signed Archie Gray to a new long-term contract earlier this year. So he's contracted till 2028. His representatives have got their heads pretty well screwed on. So I think there wouldn't be the clamour to sort of move him on quickly. That he's someone who is probably going to stay at Leeds for a couple of years, depending on his trajectory. Willy Nyonto, potentially, but all the sort of the noise around his future and his exit over the summer, you know, with all the Everton interest and the bids and whatnot, that's kind of died down. He's kind of played himself back into the hearts and minds of supporters who maybe were a bit turned off by him sort of refusing to play. Somerville, again, is someone who, you know, he is playing his best football at Leeds. So why would you move on elsewhere? Again, you know, there's always the chance that they do. And Jorginho as well. I kind of have a feeling that the connection that he has, you know, why would you want to tarnish that by sort of moving on at the first attempt? So yeah, I think they've got a reasonable chance of keeping their key young players and not getting picked off, mainly because at sort of boardroom level now, they've got some very wily, experienced operators and in the sort of negotiations department. And I think it'll be made very clear that that those players aren't for sale.
Stephen, we'll move on to your watch list. You've been watching with eagle eyes the UEFA Youth League. Any standouts you want to bring to people's attention from that?
It's been another very exciting edition of the UEFA Youth League this season. We're down to four teams for semi-final weekend in Switzerland next month. We've got Milan, Porto, Nantes and Olympiacos remaining. Again, lots of exciting players that have caught my eye. We've been covering them extensively on our breakdowns on the Substack at scatterednotebook.com. So if you want to read the full breakdown on all these players that I'm about to mention, then go ahead there. But a few standouts. I was actually really impressed by the brother of Rasmus Højlund this week playing for FC Copenhagen. They went out on penalties to Nantes, but he got two assists and scored a penalty. Kind of like a more industrious, but athletically like a carbon copy of Rasmus, just like absolute bulldog, really quick, just hunts the ball at every opportunity, but can also do some interesting things as a creator, and is a bit similar to Rasmus in that sense, I guess. A few others, Adam Aznu and Javier Fernandez at Bayern have been really, really impressive. Bayern were very unlucky to go out against Olympiacos in the quarters. For Milan, Francesco Camarda, who has been, if you are in the right circles, has been all the rage over the last 6 to 9 months or so, scored a lot of goals in this run for Milan. I think he's still 15 or might have just turned 16, so he's a real, real young one playing up a few years at the level. Trying to think of any others. Rodrigo Mora at Porto, Martin Fernandez at Porto as well, been super, super impressive. If I can chuck a couple more in there. Any Newcastle guys, Joe, that impressed you if you watched any of the games?
There's a couple who are in the England under 18s or 17s. Trayvon Sanusi is quite highly rated. And there is, who was the other one? Let me see the England 17 squad because he's in there.
Now, I'll touch on a few more. Adam Dagim at Salzburg looks like the next striker off the Salzburg pipeline. Thigaud Lande at PSV. Lou's written a few threads on him on the account if you want to read up a bit more on him. And then at Real Madrid, Gonzalo Garcia and Manuel Angel, who we first got a good glimpse at the under-19 Euros last year and have come into this tournament and played really, really well. Gonzalo's played a few minutes with the senior team off the bench this season. So yeah, there's another good little crop coming through for Real Madrid. I think the surprise for everyone will be that Barcelona haven't progressed further. They probably would have walked this tournament, but their three or four best players are all in the senior squad at the moment with Marc Guiu, Lamine Yamal, Pau Gbasi, and Hector Fort. So yeah, that's the latest. I would say at the moment, FC Porto would be the big favourite to win. They got a very established 11, lots of players playing top age, and just look really, really good. But lots of surprises are always thrown up on finals weekend in the UEFA Youth League. So, yeah, late April, the games will be on a Friday and a Monday. So if you've got a spare couple of hours, then I would advise you to tune in because it's always interesting.
Beautiful. And to read your full reports on those, Steve, people can go to scoutednotebook.com. You can also read on there the following, which I'm going to race through because we're going long. Today, Steve, you wrote a opinion piece about why you think the recently announced annual Under-17 World Cup, which will be held in Qatar for the next 5 years, is a good thing, actually. And everyone's been complaining about it on Twitter, and you kind of debunked some of the arguments. What else have we had up there recently? I had a technical area blog about kind of the behind the scenes finances of trying to run this small media company. I've also made a video essay. So we're back on YouTube, people. Very excited about that. That's on Valentin Barco. So you can go and check that out by putting Scouted Football into YouTube, probably, or I think the handle is the same as it is on Twitter, FTBL. What else have we had? Phil did a profile on Federico Redondo.
And I did a profile on Antonio Nusa.
Yes, Stephen's got a breakdown of Antonio Nusa up there. And what's coming up this week, Steve?
I will be posting a profile on Kenan Yildiz either tomorrow or the day after, hopefully. Obviously, that one was a very has been a fun one to write for me because he's been tearing it up for Juventus when he actually gets on the pitch and Allegri decides to play him. So yeah, that's the main one going up this week. We may have one other thing depending on if Lou can pull through, but I won't give any spoilers on that one.
We also should have a free Scout Notes newsletter going up today, I hope. And I'm also in the final stages of working on Billy Carpenter's new essay for us. So if you're a fan of Billy's writing, which I know a lot of people are, that's coming up very shortly, hopefully at the start of next week. That was a beautifully vigorous nod by Joe Donahue.
It was like the Garth Crooks gif meme when he just stood there sort of with interviewing somebody and he's vigorously nodding. That's my response to whenever Billy writes anything new.
Agreed. Second that. So check that out next week and to get it straight into your inbox when it drops at scoutednotebook.com. All right, boys, we are 5 minutes from the hour, which can only mean one thing. We have to move on to the greatest game show ever conceived by human mind. And that is, of course, Handbook History. It's been a few weeks, lads. And I have been in my dungeon coming up with clues. They're spicy. I think I've made a discovery, which is that I have to do obscure players only, because if Lou comes on here and they're not obscure, I'm in big trouble. All right, we're back. I just cut about 5 minutes of absolute nonsense out. We're trying something new this week, boys and girls. We're going to have buzzers for each of the boys to buzz in rather than just shouting over each other. So, Joe, please play your buzzer for the audience. Beautiful. Stephen, what's your buzzer? FBI, open up! Okay. God, these could have been so much worse, but we're keeping it PG. All right, boys, let's get first into the first player before something really bad happens. Okay, right. Rules are you get 3 points for getting it in round one, 2 for round two, 1 for round three. The clues will get less obscure, as we go forward. Okay, everyone knows the rules by now, hopefully. So let's just start. Player number one, clue one. He made his debut for the reserve side of his parent club at the age of 17, almost 11 years ago. No buzzers. I'll move on to clue two. He made his Premier League debut during the COVID-19 pandemic, as in no fans era. Clue three. He played at the 2020 Euros and the 2022 World Cup. Senior. If we have no guesses, I'm going to move on to round two. Unless I hear FBI, open up! That. Stephen.
I'm just going to do a guess because I'm... Yeah. Oh, actually, no, that's not right. No, I take it back. I'm not going to guess. I'm not going to waste my time. But I just wanted to play the buzzer, really.
Good. I'm so glad you did. All right, we'll go on to round two. This is 2 points, boys. So the chance for 3 points is gone. The door is closed and the FBI will not be opening it. Round two, clue one. He has played in 4 top flight European leagues. Clue two. 2 months into his Premier League career, he was sent off for a foul on Callum Wilson. 2 months after that, he was nominated for the league's Player of the Month.
I'm absolutely stumped. I can't get any of this.
Sent off.
Would you like any clues repeated?
I'm nowhere. I'm absolutely nowhere. I don't even think I'm going to get a point at this rate.
The face of a lost human being. All right. And clue three, round two. Quote from the profile. Marcelo Brozovic is the only outfield player to have completed more long balls than him in Serie A this season. And his completed long balls were 188 of them. Joe Donoghue.
Is it Fikayo Tomori?
It is not Fikayo Tomori. Stephen, the door's open.
Oh, you said 2020 World Cup, so it wouldn't be too early.
Yeah, completely. No, I didn't. About that.
What did you say? 2024 World Cup? No, 2022. Euros. Sorry, 2020 Euros. 2020.
Yes.
Thinking time. Played in four top flight leagues, top five leagues.
Yeah, in retrospect, Tomori was an awful shout, wasn't it?
You did say four top five leagues, Thomas.
I said four top flight European leagues. I did not say top five.
FBI, open up!
Is it?
Is it Sven Botman? Oh no, but they weren't. Were they at the World Cup? Yeah, they were.
No, it's not Sven.
Oh, no, but he hasn't played in Serie A, so that couldn't make sense. Anyway, forget I said that.
I'm just searching the soundboard to see if I can add any ambience to this. What's this one? Okay, that's good. No, stop. Stop now. It's just going to keep going.
We can let it go. We can let it ride out because that's basically the noise that goes on in my brain when this game is being played.
That's the thinking music.
Oh my God, it goes on. Stop. All right. Maybe I should play that as a timer. Anyway, we'll figure out. All right. The chance for 2 points, guys, has gone. We're on to round three. You can only win 1 point from here on out. Okay. Fingers on buzzers, please. Clue one. He is a centre-back. Clue two. At 18, he played alongside Dusan Tadic and Hakim Ziyech. Clue three, last clue. Are we ready? You've got to be fast here, boys. His current side is in an area colloquially known as Joe Donoghue Ends, otherwise known as South London.
FBI, open up!
Is it Jaro Riedewald?
It is not. Incorrect, Joe.
That's an excellent shout, though, in terms of players that I've completely forgotten.
What the hell was going on?
Sorry. What? Is it? Oh, I honestly don't even have a guess to steal.
Did I win?
You've beaten us.
Oh, that was so much less effective than I hoped it would be. All right, I win. The name I was looking for is Joachim Andersen.
No! Oh, no! Oh!
Suffering. At Sampdoria.
Great success. This is what I think of your performance there, boys. Terrible. Absolutely terrible.
Suffering.
Yes.
I can hear Lou just yelling at his phone listening to this.
He's going to be like Matthew McConaughey in Interstellar. You know, when he's sort of like shouting through the wall, screaming, no, yeah. No, no. That's what Lou's going
to
be like.
Go back in time to give you the answer.
Yeah.
Well, you lost another one. So happy days. Let's see if I can do the double on you boys, because I have one more player. I almost said his name then, almost read out the title that I'm looking at, but I'm too professional for that. So we'll move on to player number two. This is round one, 3 points if you get it right. Clue number one. In the 2017-2018 preseason, he was included in the first team setup for the first time, but his training was interrupted by school exams. Clue number two. He has never left his home country, in football terms, at least. He might have been on holiday a couple of times. Clue three. In the 2017-2018 season, he broke into the first team for real, not just training, and made 18 top flight appearances. But according to the press in his home country, he eventually lost his place due to school exams again and, I quote, catching a cold.
Right.
So, which football players are most prone to the man flu?
This is definitely where you can tell whether I have or haven't read this profile, because I definitely would have retained that little piece of information.
I don't know if that was in the profile. It was just in my independent research, which now I'm extremely strong at.
So that's not in the profile. Okay.
Sorry. I quoted a article. Yeah. Boys, you get a free hit every round. So you can just throw out a guess. If not, I'm going to move on.
I genuinely don't have a guess.
Yeah, I don't have a guess.
Okay, round two. Clue one. He scored two hat-tricks in the under-17 European Championships in 2018. Clue two, and this is a quote from the profile for you, Joe. Our writer said that, and I'm paraphrasing here, although his rise has been seismic, he must stay put for the time and develop, as a move to a top club would be damaging. End quote. He immediately left and has made zero top flight appearances since. We're just so right all the time.
I've got a load of names sort of like swirling around in my head, but none of them are hitting.
Okay, this last clue might help you. He is the first 2000 born player to play and score in the Bundesliga. That's a big one.
Again, Lou's going to be up.
Yes, Stephen.
This is going to be wrong, I think, but it might be Fiete Arp.
Stephen Gnavis, it is Jan Fiete Arp. Well done, my friend.
Get in there.
Play the celebratory music.
It was. I was already thinking it from the hat tricks, but when you said Bundesliga, that was when I knew. That's a name that I'll never forget from those youth tournament days when he was killing it. Then he went to Bayern from Hamburg, if I remember correctly.
And then did nothing.
He was in that strike crew of it was him, Moise Kean, Ryan Brewster, and Abel Ruiz from Spain. It was like the big four, and then the best one that came out of it was Moise, who has not done too much.
Yeah, and he's back in the German second division with Holsting Kiel. Nailed it.
There you go.
The round three clues were, in February 2020, he was replaced in the Champions League registered squad by Alvaro Odriozola, who I completely forgot went to Bayern Munich, to be honest. He currently plays in the German second division, and he is a forward. Bit of an obscure one there. I particularly like the bit where we said he should definitely not join a top club because it will go badly. And then he joined a top club and it went really badly. So we're right, as we always are. Boys and girls, we'll leave it there. Stephen, that's 2 points to you. I'll update the leaderboard, see how you're doing. Thanks so much, boys, for spending an hour and a bit with me this morning. And to everyone listening, thank you for being here as well. Joe Donahue, what would you like to say for yourself?
I'd say it's absolutely shameful performance from me. We've got to come back stronger in the next game and get back on the training pitch and really crack the books. because that was just, yeah, it was unacceptable. But I would urge anyone who hasn't already listened to my interview with Paul Tisdale, ex-Exeter City manager and current consultant, big on his data, and, you know, was a mentor to Ollie Watkins and Ethan Ampadu, among many, many others, to listen to that interview on the Scouted podcast, which went up last week. And we'll also have an equally interesting interview this Thursday with somebody from a very big French club.
Yes, if you want actual serious analysis and less anime wow sounds, please go and listen to Joe's show. Stephen, congratulations, my friend. Another 2 points on the board. What are you going to spend it on?
Yeah, big 2 points on the board. Really, really going to take my season forward. So I'm very happy with the result. But we keep moving forward.
You're just happy to help the team.
Happy to help the team. Other than that, everyone, go read our newsletter, and we'll see you next week. Well, yeah, it's been another very exciting edition of the UEFA Youth League. We're down to four teams now: Nantes, Olympiacos, Porto, and now I've forgotten. Remind me, Joe, who is it? Who's the fourth team?
Did Bayern make it through? Have they not got?
No, no, Bayern didn't make it. Olympiacos, oh, Nantes. Just wait. Let me. You can cut this, Tom. You can cut my bad memory. Ah, Milan. All right, let me start that again. Yeah, it's been another exciting edition of the UEFA Youth League this season. Four teams left now onto the semi-final stage coming up next month. Nantes, Olympiacos, Porto, and... oh, my God, I just forgot.
Milan.
Milan.
I just fucking blanked. All right, take three. You ready? Three, two.
No, I'm one. Keeping both of those. No, fuck off.
Three, two, one. I'm going to clap it. All right, ready?
Oh, clap it.